today on the 21st, as more Illinois governments, communities, and people are turning towards solar energy, how much are people saving?
Since I put all this in, I've actually put more electricity onto the grid than I've taken off. That's what you mean by a net zero house. This is actually a net positive house, because not only is the house being powered, but also the two electric cars are being powered by this system.
From Galena to Urbana, we talk about what's happening throughout the state with solar energy, and also how FaceTime and other technologies are helping build connections between Illinois high school students and their university and corporate mentors.
We worked one-on-one with our mentors at Illinois State University, as well as we got industry leaders.
We'll talk with Hunter Aldred, a senior at Williamsfield High School, about how he and his Illinois STEM Challenge teammates are hoping to save energy in his school. That's all this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. A few weekends ago, Germany produced so much renewable energy that for a short time, residents were actually being paid to consume electricity. That's where Germany stands with its renewable energies. But what about the U.S. and what about us here in Illinois? Where are we when it comes to the use of solar power and renewable energy resources? That's what we're talking about today on the 21st, how people, towns, and communities across the state are using solar energy. And we're taking your questions about solar, whether it's installation, the technology, or what programs might exist throughout Illinois. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show. Again, that phone number, 1-800-222-9455. We wanted to start with the town of Galena in the northwest corner of the state. By the end of the summer, their goal is to have their city hall be almost entirely powered by solar energy. Galena says it believes its system is the largest municipal-owned and operated photovoltaic solar energy array in Illinois. And Andy Lewis is Galena's city engineer and joins us now. Hey, Andy, welcome to the 21st.
Yeah, good morning.
Where are you using solar energy right now in Galena?
Yeah, well, we've only used one facility at the moment, and that's our wastewater treatment plant, which is about a mile and a half south of Galena. And then we do have plans to install a PV photovoltaic array on the roof of City Hall also, and that work will be starting in a month or so.
So it'll be starting in a month or so, but you still think by the end of the summer it'll be you'll be able to be installed and have the City Hall be operated by solar energy entirely?
Yeah, we're hoping by August this year we will have our array on the roof operational, and that's a 32.5 kilowatt array, so it's not the largest, but we're hoping that we'll be able to produce enough energy, which is really equivalent to the amount of energy we use, the electrical energy we use in City Hall each year. So effectively, that will make City Hall a net zero building.
Andy, who motivated this move for you all to do this? Was it something that the entire town felt like was important? Was this something particularly important to municipal government?
It's a combination of city staff, the mayor, and the city council. In Galena here, we do have this My Green Galena initiative. So we're looking at many things to make Galena a more sustainable community, and this was just one of many things we're looking at.
How long have you guys been working on this?
Well, the wastewater treatment plant array, that really commenced in 2010. We were faced with increasing electricity costs for our wastewater treatment plant, and in some years we were spending over $100,000 just on electricity for the treatment plant. And it was at that time we hit upon the idea of perhaps installing photovoltaic array at the treatment plant, which would help to offset some of our costs. So we ended up applying for a grant with the Illinois Clean Energy Community Foundation, that's based in Chicago, and they were able to provide us with a 60% grant towards that particular project, which at the time was about $1.5 million.
Well, 60%. Do you think that, is that something that might be available to other towns or municipalities across Illinois as they're thinking about going solar?
Yes, it is. Those particular grants are available to any branch of government as well as nonprofits. It's not available to private companies.
That's Andy Lewis. He's a city engineer with Galena, Illinois. I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation as well. Seth Darling is a nanoscientist at Argonne National Laboratory. He works at the Center for Nanoscale Materials. He's also the author of How to Change Our Minds About Our Changing Climate, along with Doug Sisterson. Seth, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Seth, as we're talking about solar energy and the technology, I wanted to ask you just about the costs of this. And are we seeing costs come down? Before we get to the technology of it, are we seeing costs coming down for panels and installation?
Yeah, costs have been absolutely plummeting for solar for years now. Back in the 70s when I was born, it was astronomically expensive to put solar panels in. But even just since 2009, there's been a 70% decline in the cost for solar energy installation. So there are all kinds of places in the country where we've already reached what you call grid parity, meaning it costs you the same or less to get your electricity from installation of solar than it would just to buy it off the grid.
Wow. Okay. And is that because of the efficiency of the technology? Or are we seeing, I know that maybe solar panels don't look that much different than they did 10 or 20 years ago, but underneath the surface, I imagine there's a lot more going on now.
So there have been absolutely some efficiency improvements, but the technologies that are out there today that you'd put on your rooftop, which is basically silicon solar panels, the efficiencies have only, it's very mature. They've only climbed a little bit in recent years. Most of those cost improvements are coming from scaling, just as you start making more of things, it gets cheaper to do as you learn how to do it better and do it at a larger scale. And also a lot of what they call the soft costs. So buying the solar panel is just one of the costs associated with putting in a system. You also need something called an inverter, which converts the direct current electricity, the DC electricity, to AC, which is what you use in your home. And then you also need to pay people to install it and all of that stuff, do the wiring. And so there's a lot of other costs involved, and all of those costs have been just dropping like crazy.
Andy, when you all were putting things into Galena, I wondered to Seth's point about storage. How are you storing power on site, or is it going back into the grid? How are you all handling that in Galena?
Well, we would love to be able to store our energy, especially what we produce from our wastewater treatment plant sites, because we end up selling probably about 50% of our energy back to the grid because we can't use it on site on a particularly sunny day like today. We're producing a lot of power there, and we can only use part of that power. So we sell that electricity back to the utility. Unfortunately, we sell it back at what they call the avoided cost, which is a very low cost indeed. It's only 3 to 4 cents a kilowatt hour, whereas we're purchasing in that power probably about 9 to 10 cents a kilowatt hour. And there's many add-on charges onto that, so effectively we're probably paying 13 to 14 cents a kilowatt hour. So if we could come up with some sort of storage, which is one of the holy grails in renewable energy now, that would just be fantastic. But the battery technology is improving all the time, but there's nothing available for us at the moment just yet.
That's Andy Lewis. He's a city engineer with Galena. In a few minutes, we're going to be shifting the conversation to talking about homeowners and, in particular, credits that are available for homeowners and how much homeowners are making when they're selling their solar energy back to the grid. If you have questions or comments, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. Seth, what about Andy's point about storage? Where are we at with the technology, as Andy says, that sort of holy grail of solar energy? Where are we at with the technology behind storing solar energy?
So we've actually made great progress in that area, and the market is changing so fast that it seems every day I read the news in the solar energy field, and there's more and more about storage every day. So the main technology that would be available today is not too different from what you have in your cell phone, a lithium-ion battery. That's sort of the state-of-the-art at the moment. And a number of companies are now selling, at least on the residential scale, systems that use that technology. Tesla, for example, you've probably seen the news, has that basically a big lithium-ion battery pack that you hang on the wall of your home. Those things are selling like crazy, and they work great. But when you talk about larger scale systems beyond residential, sort of the municipal or utility scale, you need to store a lot more energy, and lithium-ion batteries are probably not the right solution for that. There are, though, other technologies in the pipeline that will be available in the near future. Perhaps the best, most exciting option for grid-scale storage is something called flow batteries, which are very easy to scale to massive scales and look like they could be quite low cost as well.
And what are those? Those are not lithium ion, Seth?
No, that's right. So that, in that case, you're basically just, you have big vats, if you will, of solutions with chemicals in them where you can change the chemistry from one state to another, which is sort of one way to store energy. And just by flowing those solutions back and forth, you can move the energy around. And so scaling up is just a matter of building larger tanks to store those solutions, essentially. And so it's much easier to scale up to massive scales than something like lithium-ion batteries.
Seth, we heard Andy say it's a sunny day and how much they're producing today. I wonder, beyond sunlight, how weather affects the efficiency of solar panels.
So there are various ways. So, in full sunshine, you're often in the situation that Andy described, which you're actually generating more energy than you can even use locally, and so usually you'll feed that back into the grid unless you happen to be lucky enough to have storage. Clouds pass over. The winter is, you don't get as much energy than the summer because the angle of the sun is lower in the sky. Those things, of course, all affect how much energy you're going to get out, but there are also more subtle influences of the weather. Temperature is one that many folks are not aware of, that as the temperature gets higher, the efficiency of most of these solar energy technologies actually goes down. And so on a really hot, sunny day, you're getting tons of energy because of the sunlight, but the efficiency at which it's converting that sunlight to electricity is a little bit lower.
Is it because the panels get really hot?
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. Of course, if you're sitting on a rooftop, if you were there, just like the solar panels there, you'd get really hot too. So it just gets hot from the sun, absolutely, because it's absorbing that energy. Some of it's becoming heat, and then the power conversion efficiency will drop a little bit as it heats up. It still works well, just not quite as well.
In general, do you think Illinois is sunny enough year-round to make solar viable as a primary energy source?
Yeah, so you mentioned Germany. So Germany is the country with the highest per capita installation of solar panels by quite a bit, I believe. And if you look at maps of the solar energy resource, which you can find on the web easily enough with a Google search, you'll see that the solar resource in Germany is roughly comparable to Alaska.
Wow.
So we're talking about a very not sunny place, and yet they're getting massive amounts of energy from solar panels. And so I think the number in Germany is something like 1,200 kilowatt hours hitting one square meter every day. That's the amount of energy in Germany. Here in Illinois, it, of course, varies across the state, but roughly 1,600 is the number. So we have a much higher solar resource here in Illinois than they have in Germany. They're getting tons of energy from solar. There's no reason we can't do even better.
And Andy, has that been your practical experience with Galena? Have you all found that?
Yes, yeah, we have. Our particular array at the wastewater treatment plant is comparatively small compared to what exists out there today. It's a 368 kilowatt array, and we can produce almost 500 megawatt hours per year, and that's almost 90% of the power we could use at the wastewater treatment plant. So if we were able to store that energy rather than sell it back at avoided costs, that would be a great thing for us to have.
Andy, what advice do you have for other municipalities across the state who are thinking about this? What have you guys learned in Galena that you want to share with other towns?
Yeah, well, I would say don't be reluctant at all of contacting Illinois Clean Energy Community Foundation. I've found them to be very, very helpful. And if you can get 60% towards a project, that makes it very viable. Otherwise, we wouldn't have proceeded with any of our projects if we hadn't had that 60%. And one of the comments I have had from Illinois Clean Energy, just speaking to the people there, many municipalities, probably around the U.S., have problems with funding. So one of the big problems is being able to obtain the other 40% funding for the project. Fortunately, at Galena here, we have a big tax base because we have so many visitors to the site here. So we've always got additional money to put towards projects and have matching funds.
And Seth, I'm just curious, as we hear Andy's experience, and we know that the solar industry is growing not just in Illinois and around the country, and we know that that's largely driven by tax credits and other incentives. I know in Nevada, they rolled back some of the tax incentives earlier this year, and solar companies there said they were going to be laying off hundreds of workers. Do you think a solar energy business model is sustainable without government subsidies, Seth?
question about that, but there's a really important point to make up front here. Anytime we're going to talk about energy and costs, is that the traditional energy sources, primarily fossil fuels, although here in Illinois we also have a large footprint in nuclear, but speaking across the nation and certainly globally, fossil fuels represent the largest source of our energy. And there are a lot of hidden costs associated with using those fossil fuels. In fact, those hidden costs globally have been estimated in the trillions of dollars per year. And that comes from, you know, asthma attacks caused by particulate and ozone emissions and, you know, effects of climate disruption and all kinds of other things. And so even though they appear relatively low cost, they in fact are very expensive. It's called the social cost of carbon. And when you factor in those costs, suddenly, you know, the renewable sources, solar and wind and hydropower and so on, are very cost competitive, in fact, are lower in cost. But even if you ignore those hidden costs, so let's put that to the side now, as I said, there are many places, both in the United States and worldwide, where solar is already hitting grid parity unsubsidized. So without those subsidies, in some places, it's already cheaper to get your electricity from solar than from just buying it off the grid from traditional sources. Places like Hawaii, where electricity off the grid is expensive and they have a very great, of course, solar resource there. It's very sunny. You're already at grid parity.
Thanks for that point. Yeah. So thanks to Seth Darling is a nanoscientist at the Center for Nanoscale Materials at Argonne National Laboratories. You can check out his latest book, How to Change Minds About Our Changing Climate. Thanks also to Andy Lewis, who's a city engineer in Galena, Illinois. Coming up, we're going to be talking about homeowners and how they're making this transition and getting advice as well. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned.
The 21st is made possible by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, preparing students and scholars for their fields by offering access to today's cutting-edge equipment and technology within advanced library environments and facilities. The University Library at Illinois.
Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking about solar energy throughout Illinois, what governments are doing, and now we wanted to turn to homeowners. The solar panels on Scott Willenbrock's Champaign home generate so much energy, it's enough to power not just his house, but his two electric cars and provide electricity back into the grid. Earlier, our producer, Austin Keating, went to his home to see how it all worked.
So my house is 100% electric. My cars are also electric. So we don't use any fossil fuels here. Actually, you know, yesterday was an ideal day for solar power because it was very sunny and it was cool. And the solar panels actually like to be cool. The hotter they get, the less efficient they are. So even though winter, you have less sunlight and the sun's lower in the sky, on a really cold, clear day, you can get pretty good solar production. So let me show you around a little bit. This is my dog, Coco. This is my garage. My garage has... I forget how many panels on it, a lot. 24 plus 4, 28. And then the house, there's 41 modules up there. So 41 plus 28, so 69 modules altogether. Yeah, my experience is that people are most interested in the electric car more than anything else. So this is a Tesla Model S. It's a very, very good car. Got more cargo space than any car of its size. And this usually surprises people when they see it. Take a look in there. It's empty. It's a front trunk, right? When you don't have an engine, you don't really need the front for anything. And you should also remember that the one of the founders of Tesla Motors is a University of Illinois graduate, Martin Eberhardt. So this has a U of I connection. That maybe it's not surprising I ended up with a blue Model S here. Should have some orange stripes on it, maybe. So this is the geothermal system, and you can see these two black tubes down here. These are basically running water out into the yard, and then that water goes down into boreholes that go down 150 feet. and pick up heat from the earth, basically. That's why the name geothermal. And then this heat pump here takes that heat and compresses it up to a higher temperature and then just blows it into your ductwork like any other system. So just ordinary ductwork. And then it's also integrated with a hot water system. Everything in here is electric. There's, you know, my natural gas, you can see it right here. My natural gas line terminates right here. Maybe some future homeowner will need it, but not me. So today's an export day, and pretty much all summer long you're exporting electricity. Then at night, of course, you need to use electricity, so you're importing it. And in the winter, you're also you need to import electricity. So you can see, since I put all this in, I've actually put more electricity onto the grid than I've taken off. That's what you mean by a net zero house. This is actually a net positive house, because not only is the house being powered, but also the two electric cars are being powered by this system. So yeah, it's possible to get off of fossil fuels altogether.
Thanks to Austin Keating for that postcard. Scott's in studio with us now, that homeowner we were just talking to, along with Max Pike. He's a solar project developer with Straight Up Solar. They're a company that's contracted to install systems in the Champaign County and Bloomington area. Hey, guys, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Scott, how hard was it to install what you did when you had the idea, and I don't know how long it took as well, that you wanted to take your house and make it sort of a net, not even a net zero, but net positive, as you said? Was it a really difficult process?
Well, yes and no, because I started in 2013, and back then there wasn't much of a solar industry in central Illinois. So I did some of the work myself, and I also used a local construction company, New Prairie Construction, to do the installation. Now you have professional companies in the area, such as Straight Up Solar. New Prairie Construction has also become a professional solar installer. So now, you know, you can hire somebody to do all the work for you.
And we've got two experts in studio, one person who did it on his own, as well as someone whose job is to do this. If you have questions for them, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21st Show. That's 2NST Show. And Max, before we get to what the program is here, and I want you to talk about sort of what Straight Up Solar is. So we had a question on Twitter. If someone wants to know if you can recommend good companies in Chicago for solar quotes, if you want to start this process, how would you do that?
Sure. So I'm not familiar with any companies in Chicago, but some resources to check out. Vote Solar is an organization who co-sponsored a group buy program with the Environmental Law and Policy Center for the residents of the city of Chicago and a few suburbs. So maybe check out Vote Solar. You can Google them, or the Midwest Renewable Energy Association are good starting points for learning about solar and connecting with a solar installer.
And can you explain what these group buy programs are? Because that's what, unfortunately, Scott was not able to take advantage of, but is really something that helps make this much more affordable for people.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a way to leverage sort of an economy of scale in a geographic region. So the first one that we've done here through Midwest Renewable Energy Association is the Solar Urbana-Champaign program. That's wrapping up at the end of May, and we've recently kicked off one in McLean County, the Bloomington Normal program. And what it does is it leverages the buying power of the entire community in order to drive down the price of solar, and the cost is driven down by that economy of scale and by doing a lot of the education and outreach that a solar installer would normally have to do with each individual customer, by bringing customers together for education sessions called power hours. And that drives down the marketing cost and the education and the acquisition cost for the solar installer. And that savings essentially trickles down to the customer.
Before we get to what those savings are, just can you explain the geographic area now with your solar buy-in program that covers right now until May 31st, anyone in the Champaign-Urbana area, and then the Bloomington-Normal area? How long, what's the geographic boundaries for that?
So it's they're by county. So
they're
the
by county.
Urbana-Champaign is Champaign County. It's stretched the borders a little bit in a few places because we've had so much excellent enthusiasm. So it's Champaign County and then McLean County is a similar arrangement for the Bloomington-Normal area.
And are there programs like this throughout the state?
Yes, there are. Some of them, so those two are being sponsored by or administered by MREA, the Environmental Law and Policy Center, iGen, and they were put together by with help from the city of Urbana. But we've reproduced through Straight Up Solar other group buy programs in southern Illinois, Godfrey, And even some smaller, not municipalities, but sort of developments, the Newtown area in St. Louis. So they're even going on in Missouri as well.
Scott, how much was, when you put this together, and again, you had to do this on your own, do you have sort of an average ballpark of how much the installation cost you?
Well, actually, I was able to install it for exactly the same price that it's being installed today.
So oh, okay.
The way prices are, these things are usually quoted is price per watt. And Straight Up Solar is offering around $3 per watt. And that's exactly what I was able to install it for.
And how many watts do you have?
I have 17,500 watts.
Okay. I'm just trying to do the math in my head here of how much that cost you.
Okay. So, you know, we're talking about $50,000. Then you take off 30% for a federal tax credit.
And that's straight off the top.
That's exactly right. All in. All your costs, 30% federal tax credit. That's good until 2020. Then, in my case, I was able to take advantage of a 25% state of Illinois rebate. That no longer exists, but instead there's what's called solar renewable energy certificates that you can sell. And that comes out to about another 20-25% off the price. So you're able to cut your out-of-pocket cost is half, actually.
And when you say these certificates, how does that work? What does that mean when you say that you can sell them? Max, you want to explain that?
Yeah, sure. So they're renewable energy credits, and in this case, they're solar renewable energy credits. They represent the green value of renewable energy. So it's a mechanism that was created in order to differentiate between fossil fuel produced energy and renewable energy. And every time you produce 1,000 kilowatt hours or 1 megawatt hour of renewable energy, you also generate one solar renewable energy credit.
And people get paid for this?
That's correct, yeah. So okay. They're being acquired by, for example, the state of Illinois to meet its renewable energy portfolio standard goal of 25% renewables by 2025.
And on average, how much would a monthly homeowner get back in credits? Because you're literally getting paid money for this.
Correct, yeah. So it is revenue to you and it's taxed as revenue. It's important to
okay,
note that.
Okay, that's a good point, right?
Yeah. But it varies. The solar installers bid into the program at what they will pre-purchase renewable energy credits for, and the state selects them off the top. The Solar Urbana-Champaign program, the renewable energy credit value is $185. So every time your system produces 1,000 kilowatt hours, you get one renewable energy credit, and the state purchases that credit for $185.
And how long does it take for you to get to that $185? How long does it take typically for people to produce that amount of energy?
It's really going to vary based on the size of their system. So, for example, the average home in Illinois uses 12,000 kilowatt hours mm-hmm. over the course of a year. So it could take 1 month for the average home.
How about for your house, Scott? How long would it take you to generate that amount?
It would take about 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
Wow.
But my system is bigger than typical.
How big is your house? Just give people an idea of the size of your house.
You know, it's a two-story house. Each story is around 1,000 square feet. So it's not a huge house. It's a nice size house, but not huge. Typical of my neighborhood, basically.
What do you think, Max, for you, what are the first questions you normally hear from interested homeowners about this? What do you think people who may think they want to do this, now they've kind of heard a little bit about the costs, what other things do people need to know?
So we it depends who's approaching us. If it's someone that's very unfamiliar, what we call sort of a solar novice, then they tend to question the viability. Is solar, can I actually produce energy? Can I actually offset my energy consumption? The people that are a little bit more experienced tend to have more detailed questions about the direction their roof faces and the angle of their roof.
Does
and
that matter?
How steep their roof is. Yeah, and these are all factors that affect the production of your system, the amount of energy that your system can produce.
And also the quality of your roof, right? Because
correct,
you
yeah,
need to make sure
condition.
Your roof needs to be in pretty good condition for mm-hmm. you to be able to install this. And when we say good condition, is there an age of the roof to do something like this?
Yeah, so there's two factors. There's structural condition, and then there's the condition of the shingles. Typically, if the shingles are due to be replaced within the next 8 years, we'll recommend that you replace them before installing solar on your roof. But if you need structural support, that's another question, and usually a structural engineer will be brought in.
We're talking about homeowners and solar energy throughout Illinois. My guests in studio with me, Max Pike, is a solar project developer with Straight Up Solar. They're the company that's contracted to install systems in the Champaign County and Bloomington area. In studio with me as well, Champaign homeowner Scott Willenbrock, and he's talking about what he did. Scott, have there been any drawbacks? How many years are you into this project now?
I'm 2.5 years in, almost 3 years now. No drawbacks, absolutely no drawbacks. I'd like to just emphasize that when you have solar photovoltaic modules on the roof of your house, you know, you can just forget about them.
But you don't worry if there's hail or like the storms we've had the past couple of months. That would worry me and think, oh, is this going to damage the cells that I've got on my roof?
So the panels have tempered glass on them. That tempered glass is extremely tough. I mean, it would take a really serious hail event, one that we haven't seen here in decades, to break them. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, and that's what homeowners insurance is for. They are insured by my homeowners insurance.
Oh, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, in fact, a couple months after I installed the system, we had a huge wind event here. It actually was in Chicago as well. And, you know, it was no problem. I mean, these things are very, very well made. It's a piece of cake.
And did you think when you installed it that you were going to have enough, you were going to generate enough electricity to also power both of your cars? Was that a goal you had, or
it was
this kind of a bonus?
It was okay. A goal. My goal was to power one car, and I was pleasantly surprised when I found that I had enough to power two cars. So, you know, that's good.
And it doesn't make any noise or anything like that, right, in terms of thinking about, and your system also includes geothermal.
Yes.
So, but would anyone notice any difference between a solar energy and the geothermal you have and then sort of your traditional house that's on a regular grid?
Absolutely not. In fact, I'm sure there are lots of people who walk past my house every day or who even come into my house and have no idea that this house is providing its own electricity and powering two electric cars. I mean, living in my house is like living in any other house. There's no downside.
Max, when people are thinking about as people are thinking about weighing the costs of this, what do you think they should know in terms of the initial costs, installation, and all of these other issues?
So I think it's important that they know that it's more affordable and more effective than a lot of people think going into it, and it does depend on where you're located. So if we focus on Illinois, energy's not as expensive in Illinois, and so typically solar hasn't been financially as viable of an option. But the group buy programs that we're finding is actually creating a market in Illinois. So as Scott mentioned, there weren't solar companies before in Illinois, and it's creating a market. More people are coming in, and it's driving down that cost for consumers and homeowners and businesses. And so it's more affordable and more viable than a lot of people think in this area, and it's only going to get better.
How do you think this fits in with other renewable energy options for your house?
So it's the one that gives you the most control over your own energy. The other traditional option would be wind. And you can install small wind, but typically you would need a lot more of it in order to offset 100% of your home's energy consumption. And large wind obviously has a lot more maintenance involved and requires things like more ground clearance for the safety of wind turbines in case they were to fall over for some reason. So it really gives people control over their own energy.
And we heard in the first part of this conversation the idea of battery storage and kind of like that sort of the next breakthrough that we're waiting on. We've seen, you know, Seth Darling said from Argonne that for smaller houses, there is availability for that now. I don't know, Scott, if that's something you've looked into in terms of storing your energy, if that's something that you're kind of, that's what's the next thing you would like to see as a homeowner in solar energy?
Well, as a homeowner, I think I'm done.
You don't need anything else. You're good.
Yeah, I think I'm good. I'm actually more spending my time thinking about the University of Illinois now, but as a professor there. Storage is really huge. I mean, both solar and wind are things that are intermittent, and you do need some sort of storage to smooth it out, even the seasonal differences. So that is kind of the big thing for renewable energy, is having large-scale storage.
Thanks to Scott Willenbrock, Champaign homeowner, as well as to Max Pike with Solar Project. Thanks for Straight Up Solar. He's a solar project developer. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to continue our energy-themed 21st Today, finding out more about a program that uses FaceTime and other technology to help connect high school students interested in STEM fields with mentors at universities and companies across the state. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boudou. Tomorrow, teams from 19 high school students across Illinois are headed to Motorola Mobility's offices in downtown Chicago to take part in the Illinois R&D STEM Learning Exchange. That's a program that gives high school students hands-on experience with scientific research and development. And by using virtual networking platforms, the program connects students in rural parts of the state with mentors and industry and academia miles away. That includes students like Hunter Aldred. He's a senior at Williamsfield High School, about 30 miles northwest of Peoria, and it's about an hour's drive away from Illinois State University in Normal. That's where Hunter's mentor, Jarrett Williams, is. He teaches technology there. In a minute, we're going to be Hunter's going to be joining us, but let's start with Jarrett, his mentor, joining us from Normal. Hey, Jarrett, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jarrett, the Illinois STEM Challenge helps connect more than 800 students, as I said, in 19 high schools across the state. And there's mentors that include Argonne National Laboratory, Motorola, Baxter. You're one of the mentors. What are the goals of the program?
Well, our work at the Center for Renewable Energy here at Illinois State University has sort of been in alignment with what's going on with the Illinois energy grid and the infrastructure improvements that are taking place. So we've actually challenged students this year to think about, you know, with the implementation of smart meters and smart energy technology, to think about some of the problems that they face in their schools, at their homes, within their local community, and think of some innovative ways to solve some of those problems.
So the idea is to actually present problems to students for them to solve.
Exactly. And what's been really unique about the students that we've worked with is that they've really taken an engineering design approach to this, and many of them have developed prototypes, theoretical, you know, processes and systems that they could implement.
And when you're thinking about this, is this a program where this is something you feel like as an academic you want to just involve students in? I'm just wondering, for your perspective, what the benefits are for you.
Well, for the last few years, we've actually been working on some consumer education projects to teach mostly K through 12 students about some of the upgrades that are going on to the Illinois power grid, as well as smart meter technology that Ameren and ComEd, for example, are implementing across the state in the next several years. And one of the models that we sort of teach by is this iPhone model. You know, who's the first person in your house to learn, you know, how to program and download the apps on an iPhone? And we think it's the students. So we've been teaching the students about this technology and pricing programs, for example, that the utilities offer, how energy is generated, transmitted, distributed across the power grid. And we hope that in turn they kind of become educators and talk to their families and in their communities.
And Hunter Aldred is joining us as well. He's a senior. He's on the line from Williamsfield, Illinois. Hey, Hunter, welcome to the 21st.
Hello.
What was your motivation for wanting to get involved with this program?
We've at Williamsfield High School, we've all really sort of taken to STEM. And so from our STEM classes and STEM team that we formed, when the opportunity really presented itself, we all wanted to jump on board because it's stuff that we've been learning in the classroom. We're able to put it to work and demonstrate it to other people.
And I know your town has a population of about 600, and I know there's 20 students. By the way, congratulations. I know you're graduating this weekend, right?
Oh, yep.
Do you feel like prior to this, were there other opportunities for you to connect with scientists and engineers from other parts of Illinois?
Really prior to this, I wouldn't really say we did. Like, if we wanted to, it was reaching out on our own for projects, and we'd be talking to, like, engineers for solar panels or for wind turbines and those things. But this has really, like, given us a wider range of people who we can work with, and it's really made us reach out even more than what we were originally planning to do.
Right, and how are you doing that? Are you guys doing that virtually? Are you FaceTiming? How often do you get to meet in person?
In person, we really don't meet too much, and nowadays, because of technology, we've been meeting a lot of, like, over-the-phone conversations through emails, and then we've actually done a lot of, like, FaceTiming through our computers and being able to like share our screens with our mentors and industry leaders that we've been working with.
Jared, how's that working out for you? How many different mentees are you doing or virtual teams are you meeting up with?
Well, what's kind of unique about our organization this year is that we're actually overseeing 43 total projects between four different schools. So
wow.
We are working with Williamsfield. We're also working with Washington Community High School, as well as Downers Grove North and South. There's about 200 students total working on these, and it kind of varies school to school. Some schools are working as an extracurricular activity, so maybe after school or one day a week, and then others are incorporating it into their curriculum. So on a day-to-day basis, the teachers are deciding how to do that, and ultimately one project will be selected from each school to showcase tomorrow at the culminating event.
Jared, how are you? How many of you guys are working on this, and how often are you in communication with the different teams?
Well, it sort of comes and goes. I think early on in the project, there were more face-to-face visits. You know, we had a kickoff event at each school where we introduced the problem. We gave some background on, some of the current solutions or proposed solutions that are out there and some of the limitations and insights that we wanted students to think about. But we also had these sort of catch-up times where we would visit each school to meet with the small groups. But it was very brief. It was just a few minutes for each group to answer questions, see how they're doing. What's really been essential in this is something called the Mentor Matching Engine platform. It's an online system that allows sort of a secure professional communication between the students and myself. And then I would reach out to our network of professionals, other colleagues in the university and so forth with technical questions and things that really dove into the research problems the students were working on.
Hunter, can you tell us the project that you guys were doing? I know the ultimate goal, we've been talking about actually solar energy all this hour on the 21st, and I know the project you guys worked on, the goal was to help your school become more green and save energy. What exactly did you guys do?
What we did was we wanted to target lighting because we found that lighting was a real big cost for our school, and because of the fact that our town is 600 persons, the school has a really large impact on how much of the energy is used up. And so we're looking at kind of like a breakdown of our actual energy cost bill, and we saw how big lighting was, and so we wanted to try to combat that with smart technologies and innovations of that sort to try to fix the price.
That's Hunter Aldred. On the line with us as well as Jarrett Williams. We've been talking about the Illinois STEM Challenge that matches up these high school teams throughout Illinois with different academic and corporate partners. Tomorrow, they're all of these 19 of these teams are headed to downtown Chicago to make presentations like what Hunter was just talking about with the lighting. I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation. Alan Solomon is an engineer at Baxter International. He's joining us on the line from Deerfield. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
Thanks for being here. I know you've been serving as a mentor to high school students. Why did you all choose to get involved with this program?
Baxter's committed to increasing the talent pipeline because there's always a need for STEM professionals. And if we want to innovate, we need to start when they're young. And that allows us to sustain and save lives, which is Baxter's mission.
And what kind of projects how many teams have you all been working on with Baxter?
So Baxter partnered with three schools. All of them are in Chicago Public Schools. And the schools have each done from one to a handful of projects. And then, like was mentioned earlier, the one project will be selected from each school to present tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. What kind of projects are they working on? Jarrett, do you just give them actual problems that Baxter would like to solve and have them work on that?
Yeah, we try and make it realistic. So two of the areas that Baxter works on are dialysis for people with kidney failure and intravenous nutrition. And the students chose, probably because it was a little more relatable, to focus on the kidney failure option and how to make it more usable and sustainable for the patients that have to do that in the home. But we wanted to make it very relevant to Baxter so they can feel that they're working on a real-life problem.
And when you say you wanted to make it relevant, does that mean this is something that you guys at Baxter, this is a problem you're also working on?
Sure. It's an ongoing support problem that as technology moves out of the hospital and into the home, that there's unique responsibilities for the patient who's also becoming the caregiver. So Baxter constantly is trying to improve the results of that as well as make it easier to be adopted, because the patient is ultimately responsible, but Baxter's goal is to sustain the lives. So without participation on all levels, it doesn't work as well to improve everyone's life.
And when we're thinking about this, we heard Jarrett sort of describe why having sort of high school students and people, the younger people, being first adopters of technology, his perspective as an academic, what he gets out of the program. I wonder for you, is there a benefit to the corporations that are involved with these students in terms of what you guys are getting out of working with these mentor pairs?
So the benefit is certainly that we hope that they would consider Baxter as a place of employment once they were ready to look for a full-time job, but we also educate them about what a company like Baxter does so that they understand what business skills are necessary to get that and what products we make and how it works. Our goal is to be real life. And oftentimes in the academic setting, especially in the high school and earlier areas, you don't really know what people are doing in those office buildings over on the side of the highway, and the students don't know really how they could fit in and what they're actually capable of as well.
Hunter, was that true for you?
Yeah.
What are you thinking about in terms of your careers? What are your plans for after graduation?
Well, after graduation, I plan on going to the University of Iowa, and I'm going to be double majoring in biomedical engineering and political science. And I'm really looking at, like, the hospital field right now as in becoming a doctor, but then again, anything could really happen in college with the correct connections that could be made. I could see myself changing paths.
And I know you're traveling to Chicago tomorrow to attend the student showcase. What are you looking forward to about tomorrow's event?
I'm really looking forward to just being able to present all the information that we've done. We've worked for about 4 or 5 months on this project now, and I'm just really excited to get out our information of what we've done with our small little town and what we plan to do.
Alan, what's been the best part for you about being a mentor for you personally?
I just love that you can see meeting each student, how they learn what's actually available in the option, and understanding the possibilities for applying real-world science and engineering. While talking to them, you can just see on their faces how they say, oh, I've never really thought of that, or it's another opportunity. And you know that we can reach thousands of students that might otherwise not have the experience just by stepping outside of our office for a few hours and going to a school.
That's Baxter's Alan Solomon. For Jarrett Williams, I wonder for you as an ISU technology professor, and it sounds like there's a lot of different teams you're juggling. What's been the most rewarding story for you that you've had this year so far with all of the teams you're mentoring?
Well, I would definitely say I would echo Alan's sentiments. You know, I think it's really important for students to have these STEM experiences, but especially for students like Williamsfield who are in a smaller rural community, you know, to have the same opportunities as other students across the state of Illinois to not only, you know, get some of these 21st century skills, but learn about various career opportunities. And I think that the aspect of networking with fellow professionals and other students who've been working really hard on similar projects tomorrow is very rewarding.
Right, because tomorrow's event, they get a chance, I guess, for everybody to meet.
Correct.
Okay. Jarrett, I imagine some of our listeners might be wondering what they can do to get their high school involved in this program. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, so this is actually a project that's put on by the Research and Development and Learning Exchange, and they're a part of the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition. Also, if you're interested specifically in the Center for Renewable Energy or the Energy Learning Exchange, you can find us on Twitter at EnergyIL or email us at energy@illinoisstate.edu, and we could help guide some communications.
We'll put all of that information on our website as well. But thanks for that. And Jarrett, I mean, is this program has gone on for 3 years?
This is the second official year. This is for us to participate. But yes, this is the third annual, and I hope that it continues. It's from what I understand, just kind of on the inside, there are new partnerships being developed, new companies, and new challenges on the way.
And I guess corporations who might be interested could also have that go to that same website.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks so much. That's Jarrett Williams. He teaches technology at ISU. I want to thank also Alan Solomon, who's a senior principal engineer at Baxter Healthcare Corporation, and Hunter Aldred. Hey, Hunter, congratulations on your graduation.
Thank you.
That does it for the 21st today. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about the job outlook for new graduates in Illinois and how clean water is bringing out more bugs in the state, unfortunately. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. As I said, you can always find information about our shows, including all the links we just talked about, at our website. That's 21stshow.org. You can also search for us on Facebook. Look for the 21st Show. Or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is 21STShow. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening.